I'm so grateful for the invitation. Trinad gave me a call. I don't get called very often here, which I'm totally understand because I don't come. But it's great to get the call. Nityananda's appearance day. Lord Nityananda essentially to me is an almost total mystery, but it's been wonderful to be asked to speak on this day because it's forced me to go and look and get a sense of just a tiny glimpse into the significance of Lord Nityananda. I want to start with this song. I made 40 copies, so you'll have to share, I'm afraid. I wasn't sure how many people would be here. But some of you might know this song anyway. It's such a beautiful song. Parama Karuna. And then we'll see how it goes. We'll go through perhaps some of the incidents from the life of Lord Nityananda and see what comes up. Just before we sing this song, just briefly to go through it so you know what you're singing. Parama Karuna Pahu Dui Jana. These two, Pahu Dui Jana, I think this is in Bengali, by the way. Are there any Bengali speakers here? Are there? Any Bengali speakers? Oh, good. I might need to call on your help later. Dui Jana, these two persons, and Pahu, what is the meaning of that word in Bengali, Pahu? I think it means Lord. Does it mean Lord? Or Master, like Prabhu? Anyway, I think these two lords, Parama Karuna, they display the highest mercy. Nitai and Gaurachandra. Sabha Avatara, of all the incarnations, the avatars of the Lord, Shara Shiramani, they are the essence of all those incarnations. Kevala Ananda Kanda, and they have brought a path to liberation which is simply blissful. Kevala Ananda. Bajo Bajo Bai. Bai means brother. Sing, sing, brother and sister. Chaitanya Nitai, the names of Chaitanya and Nitai. Sudrida Vishvasa, with great faith and determination. Sing these names. Visayacharya, give up the path of sense gratification. We'll talk about this later. Seirase Majia, that's the one I'm not sure. Seirase Majia, the Bengali speaker. Do you know what that means? It's medieval Bengali, is it? Or something? Yeah. Yes. Immersed in the nectar. So I'm thinking that nectar would be the nectar of Mukhe Bolo Hari Hari, singing the name of Hari. Yes, thank you. Yeah, Lochan Das, who wrote this, he also was a contemporary of Sri Chaitanya, and he wrote a biography of Sri Chaitanya, in fact. Deko Ore Bai. Deko means to see. To look at. Look at this, inspect this, study this proposition, brother. Tribhuvane Nai, Tribhuvane, Tribhuvanath, I'm thinking now, my godbrother, it means, pardon me? Oh, yes, that's right. Tribhuvan, in the whole three planetary systems. Are you Bengali? Oh, okay. But you're from Orissa. Yeah, so you're very close. Emona doyala data, you will not find such mercy, is it? Or such a gift? Such a gift. Pasu paki jure. Pasu and paki means the beasts and the birds are crying, jure. Pasana vidare, the stones are melting. Suni yanra gunagata. Is it mean let alone humans? Which of those words is humans? Suni yanra gunagata. Prabhupada says anyway, he says not to speak of human beings. So let alone the humans. Even the beasts and the stones, they're crying and melting, let alone humans. Samsare Majya, now this is Lochan Das, and he's saying, I am trapped in this cycle of samsara, and I have no attraction. Se pade nahilo asa. I have no attraction for the feet of Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya. Apana karma bunjai shamana. Prabhupada says, Yamaraj is punishing me. And this is the call of the song of Lochan Das. So those who are playing mridangas and kartals, please hold your fire until we've established, you know, what speed we're going. and then come in. Thank you. I know you will anyway, because you understand. Amala. Yes. The other day in Covent Garden, we had such a wonderful afternoon. I suppose you have lots of those wonderful kirtans. It was a 6-hour kirtan in Covent Garden, and there were about 80 people there for 6 hours, and they were from all kinds of, you know, some were from the temple, some were friends of the temple, you know, friends. And but there were a lot of yoga people there as well, and it was so blissful. I thought at one point I was going to take off. I mean, I was just sitting. Other people were dancing. I was just sitting, but I thought I was going to lift off the ground. It was just so beautiful, the chanting, and to see so many people being swept up in the exactly what we're speaking of here, in Mukhi Bolo Hari Hari. Perhaps later we'll sing another song, I think, because I can only say so many words about something I don't understand. And the beauty of this Kevala Ananda Kanda, it's so easy and blissful, this process of Krishna consciousness, which Lord Nityananda and Sri Chaitanya gave us. We don't need to, you know, become experts to understand vast amount of philosophy. And this really comes through in looking at this whole story of Nitai. I was thinking, I haven't really organized it, but before I came, I was thinking to just ask anyone in the, you know, ask you to think, those of you who know anything at all, who've read anything about Nityananda, think of a word that describes him. Can you do that? Any word just that comes to your mind spontaneously. Just think of it. Have you thought of a word? Okay. So let's get a word, somebody. Yes? Compassionate. Lovely. Compassionate. Did I just miss the play? It sounded like it was Jaga and Mata. Is that what I just missed? Yeah, okay. Which is the perfect example of compassion. Nityananda, he didn't care, actually, you know, who the person was or what their background was. He was just so full of compassion. Okay, that's a great word. Another word. Yes, somebody... Blissful. Yes, Ananda. When Nityananda joined Sri Chaitanya in Navadvip, it's from reading the accounts, that's when the kirtans really took off. Because he was, you know, he was always in ecstasy. So very blissful. Another word. Avadut. Now this word needs translating for some of you. In fact, it needs translating for me. I'm not exactly sure the meaning of that word. Any Sanskrit or is it medieval Bengali experts can tell me what does that word actually mean, avadut? Ah, madman. Yeah, that would... I was going to say that would make sense, but of course the whole point is that a lot of the things that Lord Nityananda did not make sense. You know, I dipped into, yesterday, into the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And there's a few stories in there that, gosh, they really stretch, you know, the credibility, and you do wonder, was he entirely sane? So Avadut, I mean, he didn't care, basically, did he? He behaved like a madman, and he didn't care what people thought. Okay, that's three good words: compassionate, blissful, and crazy. perhaps one more word. I'm sure there were other words. Anyone else want to give a word? Yes, at the back. Renounced. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Because in the beginning of his life, he was completely renounced. You know, we'll tell the story in a bit, how he left home and he just gave up everything. But then later in life, he was right in the middle of society in Bengal, that is, with his preaching. So really, you know, his renunciation in the beginning, it took the shape of this person utterly divorced from normal society, who wouldn't even eat, actually, we're told, unless he was made to, when he was staying in Srivasa's house. He had to be persuaded to eat. And yet later in life, he became this wonderfully colourful, entertaining person who was always dancing and leading groups around and really engaged with society. So you could say that in a way, he personified that principle of being, you know, renounced in my heart, and yet at the same time being engaged with the world. So yeah, we could go on, but there's many facets to the personality of Nityananda. And the thing that struck me, particularly when I was thinking about speaking, is that Nityananda and Chaitanya are always, you know, we have to take them together. You know, most of the songs that we sing that mention the name of Chaitanya, they also mention Nithai. they go together. And that's, of course, how Prabhupada taught us. You know, we don't have anywhere in Prabhupada's temples, I don't think he ever installed a single deity of just Sri Chaitanya. I don't think he did. Yeah, he did. In Calcutta. That's interesting. In the main temple in Calcutta. Hmm. Well, I won't speculate. I'm sure he had his own reasons for doing that. But by and large, Prabhupada always wants us to, you know, worship Chaitanya and Nityananda together. And of course, in the early days of the movement, he introduced Chaitanya and Nityananda for general worship. Radha and Krishna were special, and they came, you know, a little later. Because, I'm not going to say because, but somehow they always go together. While Lord Chaitanya stayed in later life, he stayed in Puri, and he didn't go out much, actually, after the first few years. He stayed with his small circle of associates. But meanwhile, Nityananda was traveling all over Bengal and organizing the preaching there. And these are two sort of aspects of the Krishna consciousness, the harmony, the balance of Krishna consciousness. And on the one hand, Lord Chaitanya was journeying ever deeper into this other spiritual realm of the rasa, of being in the mood of Radha. And at the same time, Nityananda was out there organizing preaching. And whereas Lord Chaitanya went from being a householder to becoming a sannyasi, Nityananda kind of went the other way around. You know, he went from being an avaduta who didn't belong anywhere, and then, I don't know the details, but then he became a householder. So he's a bit of a contradiction, actually. We'll find out more about that. But I was reflecting on that, and then I was looking at my, you know, spiritual family spread around the world. And I was thinking, yeah, I can see the contradictions all over our society. And I think there's a profound message in there. So I want to begin with a couple of verses which appear in the Adi Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a whole chapter, very deep and philosophical chapter, explaining the identity of Nityananda. And very much in this chapter, he's often referred to as Nityananda Ram. Nityananda is Balaram, we're told. Just as Krishna, you know, played with Balaram as a child, so Lord Chaitanya played or had his pastimes with Nityananda. So here's a couple of verses describing the relationship between the two. Ei rupe Nityananda ananta prakash se bhave kahi muni Chaitanya Radas. Lord Nityananda has unlimited incarnations. We're being told that because he is Balaram, and Balaram is the source of Narayan, and Narayan is the source of all the manifestations of Vishnu who create and maintain the whole material world. So, for example, Mahavishnu, who lies down in the causal ocean and creates the universes. Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, who enters into each individual universe. And Kiridakshayi Vishnu, who enters the heart of every living being. Somehow, in some way that's completely beyond my conception, Nityananda is that original source of all those incarnations, Balaram. So Nityananda has unlimited incarnations. In transcendental emotion, he calls himself a servant of Sri Chaitanya. That's his essential relationship, that he is a servant, just as Balaram is the servant of Krishna. And then the next verse says, Kabhu Guru, Kabhu Shakha, Kabhu Mritya Lila, Purve Yena Tina Bhave, Braje Kaila Kela. Sometimes he serves Lord Chaitanya as his guru. So sometimes he takes, you know, the superior position to be the guru, the teacher, the leader. Sometimes he serves him as his friend, and sometimes as his servant, just as Balaram played with Lord Krishna in these three different modes in Braj. So we have, a very rich relationship between Nityananda and Sri Chaitanya. Sometimes, also Lord Chaitanya's mood is changing, so according to his mood and Lord Nityananda's mood, the relationship is different. And this is the case, you know, in Krishna consciousness, in our spiritual life, as we make this spiritual journey that we're all on. You know, some days I might wake up in a different mood than in another day, and that's allowed in Krishna consciousness. I can have many relationships with Krishna. I mean, gradually, unfolding. I do remember once, I'm not really... Anyway, it's just a personal experience. I once felt very angry with Krishna. I mean, it was a visceral anger. It was years ago when disaster struck this in, I think it was 82, when a seeming disaster struck this yatra, when the leader, who was the guru, Jayatirtha, and, you know, there was politics and things were happening in India, and he left. And half his disciples went with him. And overnight, you know, we were in complete chaos, because they were mostly the younger members who were, surprise, surprise, they were the ones that were going out and bringing in, you know, the money. In those days, we didn't have such huge amounts of generosity as we now have from the Hindu community. And we had this big, fantastic place in the Midlands, Chaitanya College. So it took about a year, but eventually we had to sell it. Initially when that news came, and I was running a small temple up in Manchester at the time, and the call came, you know, all hands on deck, we all just had to come back to the manor. And there were just, for days and weeks, months really, there was so much counseling, you know, that we had to do to one another, you know, to encourage and support the younger members who had just sort of gone through the whole process of surrendering their lives to the person they thought was going to take them back to Godhead. And then suddenly he'd gone. Anyway, it's history, something to learn from. I actually felt angry for a couple of days with Krishna. I was thinking, Krishna, how could you do this? But Krishna's big enough, you know, I mean, he can take our anger. Sometimes, you know, there may be negative feelings, and it's important to acknowledge those and not to try to suppress them or deny them. But Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, they are really sort of, you know, we'll find in the stories, Nityananda also, sometimes he became angry, he kicked, I forget who it was, he kicked someone in the chest. It sounded like a pretty ghastly scene, but because it was all somehow in a mood of acceptance, I think, you know, that it's okay to display emotion. So, you know, nobody really worried too much about it. Another time, Nityananda, he took Lord Chaitanya's staff, his sannyas staff, and he got angry with Lord Chaitanya and he broke it into pieces and threw it in the river. And this is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. They were on their way to Jagannath Puri. And Lord Chaitanya was really upset. He said, "I'm not even going to stay with you now." And he went off at high speed on the road and left all the others behind. So actually they lost track of him. He must have, because he was tall, he must have moved very fast. And by the time they got to Jagannath Puri, they had to search for him. So I think that's one of the things that Prabhupada really instilled into us in the early days of the Krishna consciousness movement, that, you know, it's okay to have emotions. And, you know, sometimes if there was an argument sort of between devotees, he didn't condemn that. He saw it as, well, sometimes, you know, there may be rivalry in service or whatever. He saw like that. So anyway, that's Lord Nityananda's essential relationship with Sri Chaitanya. He is Nityananda Ram. He is that source of everything. And so when we speak of, which we do, we're told to understand Nityananda as being the, you could say, the archetypal guru. That's underpinned, you know, that understanding is underpinned by being aware that, well, he is the supersoul. Every one of us, you know, we are in the company of the supersoul. And the supersoul is guru, teaching us all the time. I always feel that the task of the, you know, there's the guru outside, and the task of the guru outside is to point me to the guru inside, the supersoul. Once or twice I heard, you know, that Prabhupada sort of said, well, somebody said, well, Prabhupada, why did you do that? And Prabhupada said, Krishna told me. You know, that's on a few occasions he said things like that. Krishna told me. At the time I thought, gosh, that's amazing. But I see now that that happens in spiritual life, that, you know, once we get used to the idea that I'm always, actually, Krishna's always with me all the time. It's a mystery. How can Krishna be the source of everything and at the same time be with me? But he can. Just like the sun, you know, can be far, far away, but I can really feel the presence of the sun when it shines in the window. So Krishna can be more than like the sun, but in a direct, personal way, it's as if the sun itself were residing in my heart. Krishna is there. But he's hidden. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in a few places that I am hidden in this world. So we can, you know, we have our Guru Srila Prabhupada, or your Param Guru. And, you know, he's here with us, still, actually. And then there are the whole line of spiritual teachers. And then behind all of them, there is Nityananda. And so on, and Vyasa, and all, so many teachers. But ultimately, what they all want is for me to find that connection, you know, in my heart. So I'm going to be... I'm just going to read one or two excerpts from this book. I just want you to know that it exists. It's called The Birth of Kirtan, and that's the life of... It says, the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya. And I was very blessed. I was asked to write this book a good few years ago, actually. And when I was asked, you know, to write the life of Lord Chaitanya, I thought, how am I going to do this? I can't do that. What do I know, you know, about Lord Chaitanya? But my friend in America, Ram Dass, who publishes, you know, he owns Mandala Publishing, he made a very generous statement. He said, Rancho, you are born to write this book. So after I heard that, I thought, okay, I better do it. Anyway, it was a long time in the production, but it's out now. So the and it's based, by the way, on entirely on the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Chaitanya Bhagavat. These two biographies of Sri Chaitanya, they have a different flavour, and the Chaitanya Bhagavat pays more attention to the early life of Sri Chaitanya when he was in Navadvipa and he was surrounded by family and friends. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita pays more attention to the later part of his life. I mean, they cover the same material as well. And also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are lengthy philosophical discourses. And Prabhupada, you know, had a particular attachment to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it's high literature, beautiful, beautiful poetry and literature. So based on these two books, and in the accounts, you know, that I extracted from those books, Nityananda doesn't really make his appearance until, you know, later on. Lord Chaitanya is living as his Nimai in the village, in the town of Navadvip, and he was such a charismatic young child and very mischievous and always surrounded by friends. He was a sort of a gang leader, actually. Navadvip was filled with students. There was a sort of a culture of intellectual life there. And because Nimai was very, very bright, he started teaching at a really early age. It's not exactly clear, but sort of around the age of 12, I think, he already started his own school, and he had students. And so, you know, he was able to, and the pastime was, and the gangs, I said gang warfare, but the warfare was, it was debating. You know, you challenge someone to a debate. And that was the pastime. So he used to challenge people. And everyone, when they would, the stories say that when they would see him coming, you know, the very bright scholars, they would hide because they didn't want Lord Nimai to challenge them and be humiliated. So he was, and he was, the other thing which is described that although he would crush, you know, his peers, the other young people in his arguments, but they loved him. It's that, you know, that kind of personality that is, sometimes you see someone who's really clever and always comes top, and it kind of, you know, it's difficult, it jars a bit because you kind of don't like them because they're so good. But sometimes you meet someone who's so clever and brilliant and powerful, and at the same time, you're just irresistibly drawn to that person. And that's wonderful to meet someone like that, you know, who simultaneously inspires you and, you know, shows you how it's done. So he was one of those. And at the age of, I think, 18, by which time Nimai Pundit, as he was called, he was married, and his father died. So, was he married? I can't remember if he was married or not by that time. Anyway, his father died. And so he went 200 miles to Gaya to observe the ceremony of honoring the departed spirit of the father. I realize now that that's terribly important. And family life in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we get a kind of a mixed story, because on the one hand, Lord Chaitanya was very renounced at a young age. He left his family. But when he was with them, he really did honor them, and he honored his mother. If I look back, when I was, I think I was not yet 20, sorry, not yet 30, and I was in charge of the London temple, very busy, important work to do, I thought. And my father died. He was in London, and I wasn't there when he died. I got the call from my sister. That's a long story, but... So I went to the funeral, and I felt strangely divorced from it all. I couldn't grieve. I didn't grieve, really. I was just sort of rather... I think that side of me, emotionally, was perhaps rather closed down. So I went to the funeral, but I didn't stay long. Because I thought, I've got important stuff to do back at the temple. That's more important than this. I thought that. I'm saying I know better now. To honour the, and of course those of you who are from Hindu families, I'm sure you probably know this because it's in your culture, but certainly in my family, it was a bit disjointed, disconnected. And so that was an important thing, that he went to honour his departed father. And while he was in, Lord Chaitanya was in Gaya, he had a profound spiritual transformation, which is very remarkable in itself, because transformation is part of the spiritual journey. In my experience, life, the spiritual life doesn't go on a smooth path. There's ups and there's downs. And there can be, strong challenges in the course of life. And there can be, times when you might lose hope a bit and start to doubt all sorts of things. One of the things actually my father told me before he died, he said, we didn't get along very well, because whenever I went to see him, I used to preach at him. And he didn't like that. But I didn't know any other way. I was so, programmed as a preacher. And so one of those occasions he said, Richard, sometimes he called me old chap, but he probably didn't on this occasion. He said, there will come a time when you will lose your faith. He said, it happens to everyone. Sometime in the middle of life, you will lose your faith. All the great saints lost their faith at a certain point, but it will come back, don't worry. I'm just passing that on anyway, because I've found it to be true. Because then that can lead, to uncovering deeper. You go deeper and you find a deeper connection and a deeper understanding than you had before. And then you might think, now I understand. And that might last for a while. And then maybe, some time passes. And it could be, 10 years or 20 years, children grow up or whatever. And it might happen again. And in this way, each time you might go deeper, you might go deeper by the blessings. There's only blessings in the life of a devotee. what looks like apparent disaster is always only blessings. I always like to remember that there's a very instructive story. It's about one of the greatest writers of the English language in the 20th century, Aldous Huxley. He was a scholar at Oxford at the outbreak of the First World War. And all his friends, that whole circle, you know, when the First World War broke out in this country, there was a mad rush to join the army. It's crazy, but everyone wanted to join and go and fight for the country. It was a matter of honor. So together with all his friends, you know, they just dropped their studies. And, you know, these were the cream of the intellectual cream of the country in Oxford. They dropped their studies and rushed off to join the army. And they were put through a 3-month training. So at the training, one day, the chap next to Aldous Huxley, his job was to throw a hand grenade, and he threw it in the wrong direction, and anyway, it landed next to Aldous Huxley and blew up his foot. He didn't blow it off, but he injured him very badly, which seems like, you know, a terrible disaster. So what happened is he was taken to hospital. He spent, I think, 6 months in hospital recovering. And when he got out of hospital, they said, "You're not fit to go and fight on the front line, so we'll put you behind a desk." And so he spent the rest of the year of the war behind the desk, and by the end of the war, all his friends, every single one, were dead. And then he went on to be... He hadn't written a word by then. I mean, he hadn't written any books, but then he went on to publish dozens of very beautifully written books. So it seemed like a curse, but it turned out, you know, to be a blessing. And in the life of, in all of us, in our lives, you know, there are occasions which seem, you know, life just seems difficult, or there's something goes wrong. I mean, just like all those years ago, Jayatirtha leaving, I have no doubt that that was all part of some bigger, you know, intention that was being fulfilled in that instance. Although momentarily I did, you know, curse Krishna, but transformation comes sometimes at these difficult times. That's when it mostly does come, actually. In the case of the young Vishvambara, as he was called, Chaitanya, at that time, his father died, you know, and he was left the only member of the family to look after his mother. So anyway, he did the proper thing. He went to Gaya, and while he was there, he had this transformative experience. So when he came back, he wasn't the same personality. He was no longer so sure of himself. I mean, he was no longer, how would you say, so commanding, telling everyone what to do and leading everyone. He just wanted to be on his own and chant Krishna's names. And so people gathered round him slowly, and he began chanting with the Vaishnavas. But he wasn't ready to start his mission until the arrival of Nityananda. So I want to just read I'll just read just a short passage. Nityananda, okay, he was born in East Bengal, and when he was also a leader amongst his friends, very popular, and sounds like an amazing, unpredictable character. Anyway, when he was 12, a sannyasi came and stayed at his house and sat up all night talking with his father. And in the morning, this traveling sannyasi said to his father, "I would like to ask you a favor." And his father, being a Brahmin who always respected, you know, the sannyasi's household of Brahmin, he said, "Whatever you ask, give me your son. Let him come with me. I need a companion." So Hadai, I think his name was Hadai, Nityananda's father, he was actually thunderstruck because he was so attached to his son. And he didn't know what to do. So he went to his wife to ask her, as any good husband would do. And she said, "You decide. Whatever you want, you do it." She wouldn't take the decision. So he said, "All right, take him." And so the sannyasi took this 12-year-old boy, and not long afterwards his father died of a broken heart, we're told. And he took Nityananda with him. They travelled all over India, and after a number, and he taught him, we're told, taught him yoga, and he showed him all the holy places. You know, he did the sadhu thing all over India. And whilst he was travelling, he met so many amazing people. And at a certain point, he left the company of his guru and he started travelling on his own. So for 20 years, he travelled over India and he became more and more attached to Krishna. And on his journeys, he met Madhavendra Puri, who taught him about, especially about Krishna and Radha. And he came to hear that in Navadvip there is an amazing personality who's teaching about Krishna, and he's wonderful. So he decided, he was at that time staying in Vrindavan, and he decided, "I have to go and see him." So Visvambar, that's Lord Chaitanya, he's in Navadvip with his friends. He awoke from an unusual dream, and he told his friends what he had seen. "I saw a majestic figure who reminded me of Krishna's brother Balaram. This figure stood outside my house calling my name. I believe someone special has come to Navadvip to see me, and we must find him." His friends spent the morning looking for this wonderful person, but they returned without success. Visvambar decided that he would find the stranger himself. And in the afternoon, he went out with them and led them straight to the door of the house where Nityananda was staying. Inside, they beheld a handsome man dressed in white cloth with his hair drawn into a top knot. It was Nityananda. He was unaware of his visitors because he was in deep meditation. They could all tell he was a great soul, and they bowed down before him. Then Visvambar directly stood in front of him and just waited. So, you know, Nityananda was in silent meditation, which interests me. It's okay sometimes to sit, you know, just quiet and feel that, you know, that inner connection. I find, you know, after chanting for a prolonged period, this is a personal thing, but I don't think I'm the only one, I find just sitting quietly at the end of the chanting and just feeling that inner presence is powerful. You know, the connection is so, you know, chanting really strengthens that awareness, that inner awareness of the presence of the super soul in my heart. And in case someone is thinking, well, you know, the super soul, you might think this, I don't know if it would occur to you, it might do. The super soul, that's, you know, the four-handed Narayan form of Vishnu. I'm more interested in Krishna. But of course, Prabhupada taught us that, you know, if your devotion is for Krishna, Krishna is in your heart. And he always liked to quote that beautiful verse from the Brahma Samhita, that for the person whose eyes are anointed with love, they see Krishna in their heart. And I never tire of repeating this story. Once I was fortunate to be in Prabhupada's room with him here at the manor, and he was talking about this. He said, yes, Krishna is in your heart, and he's not alone. Krishna is there with Radharani, and all his associates, the entire spiritual world, is there. And he said, it's just like television. You can see. That was upstairs. You know, we are conditioned, I am conditioned, to see everything in terms of, you know, measurements of space. You know, this whole world can be measured and written down. Scientists are trying to do it, to measure everything. But there are some things that cannot be measured. And, you know, how is it possible that you could fit the whole spiritual world in my heart? Of course, it's completely inconceivable. But it's profoundly true, and it's very important. Life-changing, you know, realization to begin to glimpse that possibility that Krishna is with each and every one of us. So, Nityananda, yes, and I do remember when I was in Los Angeles in 1975, you know, we were painting pictures for the books, and in the same studio was Jadarani, who's now called Shamarani. Some of you may have met her. And, you know, Jadarani was, gosh, what an amazing devotee. You know, she joined in New York in sort of 1968, when Prabhupada just began, or 67. And to begin with, she was, you know, the only, Prabhupada's only female disciple, I think, for a brief period. And we used to call her the tape recorder because she could sit in a class of Prabhupada. I was told this. And, you know, afterwards, people would say, Jadarani, what did Prabhupada say? And she would just repeat the entire class, you know. Yeah. So she was also a brilliant artist, and all of you will be familiar with her art. It's just quite beyond this world. So she had written to Prabhupada, and she'd asked him, when I'm chanting Hare Krishna, you know, what should I be thinking of? She said, my practice is, because we had the Krishna book by then, she said, I look at the pictures in the Krishna book while I'm chanting. And Prabhupada wrote back to her and said, there's no need to look at anything. Just chant, and Krishna will reveal to you in your heart everything. So on that occasion, and so many occasions, you know, he spoke about this inner life. So when they came and they found Nityananda, he was sitting with his eyes closed, totally unaware of his surroundings. And there they were, standing in front of him. Vishwambar Chaitanya himself was there. Finally, Nityananda opened his eyes, and he saw the very person he'd been seeking for so long. He was stunned with recognition and could not speak. Prompted by Vishwambar, one of the devotees recited a verse about Krishna. When he heard Krishna being described, Nityananda shuddered and rolled upon the floor in floods of tears. Vishwambar raised him, and the two embraced, floating in an ocean of love. For a long time they held each other, crying with joy. Then Nityananda told of his endless pilgrimage, how wherever he went, he saw only the holy place, but never Krishna. How he had searched everywhere for Krishna all his life, and now he had found him in Vishwambar. The devotees looked on in wonder. They felt like they were seeing Rama and his brother, Lakshman, or the brothers Krishna and Balaram. So that's how they met. And from that time on, you know, in Navadvip, they did everything together. They were inseparable, and Nityananda headed up the, you know, the preaching. And hence, he came face to face with Jagai and Madhai. And I was reflecting, you know, earlier on when we were singing the song, and we came to this line in the song, Vishaya Chadiya. The song is saying, you know, sing Mukhe Bolo Hari Hari, sing the names of Hari, but Vishaya Chadiya, give up sense gratification. And I was reflecting on that, and how, you know, I'm speaking from my personal experiences, that, I mean, I think some people are better at giving up sense gratification than others. And it's not necessarily to do with, you know, it's not a way of measuring a person's connection with Krishna. It's just, austerity seems to come more easily to some than others. It never really came that easily to me, I have to say. But at the same time, there were periods in my life when, you know, I was super austere. I did that for a while. So I just wanted to say, you know, austerity or Vishayacharya, the path of not seeking sense gratification, you know, we try our best because we know that in the end, I don't have to be perfect because luckily, Lord Nityananda and Sri Chaitanya and all the Vaishnavas are just unlimitedly merciful. There's a word for it, actually. It's called unconditional love. Unconditional love is when, you know, think of a mother with her child. The child is misbehaving and giving so much trouble, and it doesn't finish. You know, they used to say, when I had little children, they said, wait until they're two. The terrible twos. So I was waiting, you know, I was waiting for them to get really troublesome. And then it didn't happen. So then they said, wait until they're five, you know. And then eventually it came, wait until they're teenagers. So I was waiting and waiting. And they were really never that much trouble because, you know, they're my children. Whatever they do, I love them. That's what parents do, hopefully. And so the same thing is there also in Krishna and in all the, you know, Krishna's in my heart, but he has so many agents and representatives who look after us in so many different ways. And they all have this natural quality which comes from Krishna, which is called unconditional love and acceptance. So, for our own good, we've been given, you know, this principles of renunciation. And I'm so grateful to Prabhupada for giving me those rules. Even if I can't always follow them, but they're kind of, they're so deeply in my psyche that there's always that sort of safety net. You know, that, how can I say? There is just something, it's really, you know, that voice of the guru. You know, now, don't go too far, keep careful while you're living here. So just do your best, is what I just concluded. Do your best. And ultimately, Krishna's very merciful. So, yeah. So Nityananda, you know, he met Jagai and Madhai, and they were the worst of the worst. I mean, they really, really were. And that's such a beautiful story, which I know you've seen the, I guess you've seen the, I don't know, I was thinking of a word to describe what you might have just seen that sounded in a fairly basic presentation. It's a lot of shouting and action. But actually, there's a very deep mellow in that story. And I just wanted to read to you, because it's told in more detail in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, about how that story sort of ended up. You know, they, Jagha and Madhai really were, you know, they were like the Kray twins, something like that. You know the Kray twins? You know, they were the London's worst gang leaders who just caused mayhem in the East End, just killing people, and they didn't just kill them, they executed them sometimes in very unpleasant ways. And they eventually got banged up for life and probably died in prison, I think, I don't know. They were brothers. So Jagha and Madhai were like that. I mean, they were seriously evil-minded. I won't say they were evil, but they were evil-minded. But as you just saw, you know the story, how Lord Nityananda insisted that Lord Chaitanya was ready to kill them on the spot, but Lord Nityananda insisted, no, have mercy on them. I accept them. So then that evening, you know, after this sort of acceptance, they grovelled on the ground, and Lord Chaitanya said, well, you know, if Nityananda accepts you, then I accept you. And that evening, the kirtan was more intense than usual, because every night they had kirtan. And before long, Jagha and Madhai were dancing with the devotees. And in the dance, both of them were touched by Vishwambar. Actually, there was something where I didn't put it into this book, because maybe I should have. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's described that they were black. The color of their, when they were dancing, you know, in the company of the devotees, their color appeared to be black because they were so full of sinful reactions that their bodies appeared to be black. And at a certain point, they were embraced. And by Lord Chaitanya, when he embraced them, their bodies changed color. And it became effulgent. The blackness went. So at the end, they fell before each one of the devotees and received their blessings. And Vishwambar made a declaration, from now on, I personally live in the bodies of Jagai and Madhai, and whoever serves them, serves me. So sometime later, Nityananda was wandering carefree in the streets of Navadvip when Madhai appeared before him. Falling at his feet, Madhai washed them with his tears. Please, he's crying, please forgive this ungrateful soul for the harm he caused you, he prayed. Rise, Madhai, you are mine, I am yours, said Nityananda. Does a father take offense from his infant son? You have received my master's mercy, therefore there is no fault in you. And that's the, you know, the vision of unconditional love. I see no fault. So, you know, he may have seen no fault, but Madhai was tortured because, you know, the memory of all the people he'd hurt. And some of you might be familiar with, you know, the 12-step process that, you know, people who have difficulties with addictions can get help in the 12-step process. And the first step is having faith in a supreme source of power. So you can call that God, or depending on the individual person, but it's having faith in God. And there's 12 steps. So I think it's the third or the fourth step is you go back through your life and you look at, well, who are all the people that I have hurt? And let me review, you know, who do I need to forgive and who do I need to ask forgiveness from? And I remember, you know, I saw a book once on forgiveness, and I thought, oh, that's jolly good. I'm really glad, you know, that people are writing books on forgiveness. Luckily, I don't need to read that. But then later in life, you know, when I sat down and really examined my goodness, I've got so much work to do to forgive people, and ultimately, you know, forgiveness. Well, it's a mysterious thing because, you know, we already have forgiveness. It's just accepting it is so hard. Accepting forgiveness. Forgiving myself, really. Because we all have this sense of deep-rooted guilt. So, Mudhye had this. He was tortured by this feeling of deep guilt. I mean, he'd killed people. He'd raped, killed. So Nityananda told him, he said, Master, I am troubled by one thing. I've grievously hurt countless people in Navadvip. I don't even know who they are, so I can't beg their forgiveness. How can I make amends? He didn't know who they were because most of the time he was blind drunk and he didn't know what he was doing. And Nityananda said, build a bathing ghat beside the Ganges. Greet each person who comes to bathe in her sacred waters and humbly beg forgiveness. So with heavy heart, Mudhye leveled a platform beside the Ganges and dug steps to serve as a bathing place. And there he stayed, spade in hand, to maintain the place every day from dawn till dusk. Chanting the names of Krishna, he served all who came to bathe and cared for their clothes. And each person, as they would come, he would say, forgive whatever offences I have made against you. Please, show your mercy to this fallen soul. So that's, yeah. And you know, when someone asks forgiveness, no matter what they've done, if they really ask it from their heart, you can forgive them. All right, I'm going to finish there because we're supposed to be finishing at 10, is that right? It's time for sing another song if you want, or else if anyone has any questions or things they would like to add.